Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is another dope week with Raygun Wizard crushing it. Raygun has had some cool things happen in his toy making career of like 12 or 14 years. Like, it's such a long time to be making toys, and he's been doing it and it's been amazing. And then he had the release and the chasing of the soft vinyl piece Cube Head, and he's just crushing it, and he's got a new toy in the works, and it's amazing. If you want to support Toys on Tap in a free way, you can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. You can like, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. And if you want to support us even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. That's where you get the extra little goodies. You get extra little something here and there, a little something, something. All the Patreon supporters will get a Frank figure when they are done, because we love the Patreon supporters. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Dude, this is the quickest I've ever scheduled and done an interview for an artist.
It's kind of crazy, yeah.
It's wild. You were on the list. I mean, I go through like cycles every couple months, and I was like, oh, I wonder who's next. And I realized that I hadn't reached out to the next cycle yet. And so it was like just telling certain artists like, hey, I have openings so soon. So it's rad to have you on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for the invite.
Of course, of course. I mean, we start every interview the same. You got to introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do.
Okay. My name is Elias, or Eli. I go by Raygun Wizard on Instagram. I've been doing like 2D art and resin toys for probably 10 or 12 years, back when I started college. And kind of took a break from like the creative scene for a little while, and was still collecting, but I got back into like making resin toys and producing my first Sofubi toy last year, I think. So yeah, it's been a busy year. I've kind of like picked it up really fast and hit the ground running. I've been to one show this year, and I'm doing Assembly Required again in August. So super psyched about that too.
Right. Is that the Philly one?
The Philly one, yeah.
The Philly one. Yeah. I mean, 10 to 12 years to be working on resin is bonkers. That's super early. That puts you at like 2012.
Yeah. 2011, 2012. Just kind of started. So I was like heavy into like the 2D art, like graffiti art and stuff like that. And just kind of like lowbrow illustration. So a lot of the artists that I was super into at the time started producing their own toys. And then I was like, I didn't even know that like art and toys worked together, you know, like, cause I always had a thing for toys, and I liked them growing up, but I didn't know that you could make your own, you know? So mm-hmm. Seeing all those artists that I admired, just like making their own stuff, that kind of got me into it.
That's insane. I mean, let's walk it back. I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
I just turned 32 in July. Okay,
great. We're around the same age. What are you playing with as a kid? Like doing all those things? What are the toys you had, the cartoons, all that stuff?
So like I was born in 93. So like I always had like older cousins who had some of the older stuff, but like the stuff that I was really into and playing with was like Godzilla toys. Like the Godzilla the movie 2000 came out, and then there was like a bunch of figures that came out of that. Really liked like the cartoon Batman toys, Batman and Robin. And then Power Rangers was like super sick to me, which is cool because now all that's like that Ultraman and Kamen Rider and Japanese stuff that I'm getting into now is like kind of reminds me, it's a little bit nostalgic of the Power Rangers that I was into. But I'd say probably mostly Godzilla. Yeah, I just remember playing with like every type of Godzilla toy when I was a kid.
That's wild. I think I've talked about this before. I had no concept who Godzilla was until like I don't know. What's the Matthew? I think it's Matthew Broderick is in a Godzilla, like Godzilla 2000 or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
know.
the first time I even realized there was a possibility of a giant lizard out there.
My mom, she was like, I don't even know why she was watching them, but she would like bring home the VHS tapes and she'd be like, you're gonna love this. And so
Yeah.
I watched like Godzilla and like the space monster, Monster X. And then we had like Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. So like that stuff was, I just loved it.
The crazy thing is, like, you could watch those now, and because you have some kind of connection to it, you still like you could watch the whole movie. I don't have the connection, so the movies kind of suck. Like,
It's
the old
hard.
ones are not great. But I have fallen in love with Kanigan, who's in that realm of kaiju stuff, and it's like an unreal love for that character. It's so stupid.
No, he's a cool character. I like him.
He's
He's
a
like
walking
the money
coin
purse
purse.
character.
Yeah, that is wild. So, I mean, you do that stuff, have all these toys, like watching Godzilla and stuff. How does that kind of, I mean, there's a point at which most artists go one of two ways. Toys stay with us, that kind of art kind of begins as a young age, or all toys go away, we pick up skateboarding or something else.
I mean, so I had a collection of toys and
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
and Dave, go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys
We talk about old toys
and new toys,
and toys that we make.
and we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
Hey, I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who
But
knows?
you gotta check it
Anyway,
out.
Toy
Toy
Rats.
Rats.
YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
I don't know. My mom was just super like neat about the house. So
Yeah.
if I didn't show love to something for like a period of time,
Yeah.
it would be gone. So I wish I could say that I had, like a collection of things from my childhood, but I don't really. So as that stuff kind of phased out, I got more into like video games and there was like a skateboarding, longboarding phase. But I always collected toys in some capacity. So like even in high school, I had like, some Marvel or some Dragon Ball Z or something like that. And then in college, I was like picking up Dunnies with my friend, because we liked the 2D artists. And if I can have that in a 3D form factor, that's cool too.
That's rad. I mean, I got rid of I got rid I don't know what happened to him. All the toys except one stuffed animal from when I was a kid.
Oh
And
yeah.
it could have been, dude, it could have been me, could have been my mom. It seems like that's the progression of 90s kids, right? Like, video game systems come out, skateboarding's getting big again, and it's like, this is just what we do. BMX, all those things, and you just get rid of all the stuff, and it's such a bummer.
Yeah, it was also it kind of had to be like once you start getting interested in, girls or whatever, it's like you're not really playing with toys as much, but they're still kind of in the closet. You
Yeah.
look at them, pick them up
If
every once in a while.
dude, if nerd culture existed like and was widely accepted back then as well, I would have never given up toys. I would have never like to find a girl that's like, no, you keep your toys. Holy hell. You where's this interest of art kind of start? I mean, a love of 2D stuff is it's cool because you reference graffiti, which usually when people come on, they just talk about drawing and painting, but to love graffiti early on, and not just see it as like, ugh, that's just stuff on a wall, is a pretty cool thing. So when does the love for 2D art or the artist side of you start to come out?
So like growing up, I spent a lot of time at, at my grandparents' house. And my grandma on my dad's side was like an art professor at Florida International University. And so she was a sculpture professor. And so she just like, I guess to occupy me or to like show me like, what she was into and what you could do just to kind of bond. She would just put this huge hunk of like clay or this pad of paper in front of me, and we would just like draw all day. I'd get like dropped off in the morning and we'd draw, we'd have coffee and donuts or whatever. So I guess I must have been like I don't know, five or younger, and just kept doing that. And then, you know, in like high school and middle school, it evolves into, okay, I'm drawing these crazy creatures and things that don't exist in this world, you know? And so that just continued. I always loved like cartoons and stuff. So any of that lowbrow stuff, like really gritty, cartoony type, yeah. I've always been into that kind of thing.
Oh, that's so good. And then we go to college or school or something. Do we do art stuff, or do we kind of just leave art behind as well? Wait. Let's pause. I know I don't want to give you a break from this glorious podcast that you are currently listening to, but I have got something to say. First and foremost, I'm grateful. If you're listening to Toys on Tap, you are the reason why we get to do amazing things, help artists, bring artists up, produce their toys, all kinds of cool things. We want to take that a step further. If you could help us achieve our next goal, all you got to do is leave some reviews. I'm looking for 15 new reviews to be put on Apple Podcasts. It would be amazing. It helps me and Toys on Tap to take over the world and get these artists in front of more people. I know you got this. Now let's get back to the episode.
It was always there in like some capacity, I guess. Yeah. It was like more of a hobby, but I studied psychology and I ended up doing like social work kind of. That was like my first career path. But, you know, like my friends in college were also like big artists. And so we spent a lot of time like drawing, painting together, making music. And so that was always just like a really cool creative atmosphere to be in. So like, you know, I had like the career path, the thing that I was going to like do for a job, but, I always enjoyed that time with friends creating things a lot more. I'm sure that's pretty relatable to most people listening.
Yeah. That is, yeah. I found out recently that like my best friend was doing art all through high school and never told me, and was like stenciling up stuff around town and like,
oh, sick.
Yeah. Doing the sickest stuff. And it's like, I started asking like, we were always together. At what point did this, and we just never, I don't know what his deal was, but, later on, like it's been cool to do art together and do all kinds of stuff. But yeah, it is wild. I mean, can we pause on the social work thing? Dude, social work, any kind of work with kids or with people in need or that kind of stuff, holy hell. Like it just seems like artists have this empathy or are in the empath area. And what was that like? That is so different from making art and doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I worked with like foster kids and their families and stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, it's like a really cool thing to be able to like relate to kids in that way. Cause you'd be surprised how many kids in the foster care system just like drawing or any kind of like creative output. And it's super helpful for like the things that you're working through with them, to be able to express the things that are going on around them and how they feel in like, you know, a drawing or even just words or something like that. So, but it's something that I love to do, and then I can share it with you. And if you like to do it, then we can use it as like a, you know, let's explore some of the things that are going on in your life or some things that you might want to talk about but don't know how to express through drawing and things like that.
We're students now, and one of the things that, like, whenever you meet with them, it's over food, it's playing a sport, it's doing something because it gets people talking. And one of the things that they've done, I'm not an artist by any means when it comes to drawing or any of that stuff, but I have a couple students that are, and it's really cool to like, you draw as we're talking and we'll get through the conversation, or like, we'll talk through what you're drawing or whatever. And it's, dude, art just opens up avenues that could never be opened up otherwise.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, you left social work, which how any social worker stays for long periods of time with all that emotional stuff. At what point did you leave and then kind of pick up toys, or like pick up the reality that you're watching artists make toys?
It's kind of a good question, I guess. So it's still not like my full-time job, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, spending a lot more time on it now, than I probably ever have. But I guess I kind of saw like myself getting, like older. And so I've always known that I wanted to, create like soft vinyl toys, like, seeing figures pop up, you know, in 2012 or 2013 from, like Skinner and MVH did the Crawlos, and that thing like blew my mind when it came out. And I just like, since then, I've always had like these like figures in my mind, and I love them. I loved like the form factor. I love the materials, the paint schemes. I'm like, if I don't do this by the time I'm too old to do it, I'm going to be so pissed at myself. So I guess like a couple of years ago, I was like, okay, I'm just going to bite the bullet. I'm going to use one of my designs that I already have. I'm going to beef it up digitally, and I'm just going to send it, and I'm going to have this toy produced. So I did that, and it seems to be going good so far.
Oh, and it's a sick toy. I mean, it like, if we're both talking about the Cube Head.
Yep.
Yeah. Unreal. I do want to talk, like, getting into the resin, early stages of resin work is, it's like a barren wasteland out there, figuring out how to do it. So, I mean, you have early people like Sucklord who are making toys, and then, but resin toys, I mean, I have a resin toy from 1989 that it's like wild. It's so early on, and they're figuring out how to do it and how to replicate and do all that stuff. And so what was it like beginning this process? Plus early on Safubi, like, how did you even know? Like, I took so long for me to get to Safubi. Like, how did you even know about that stuff that early on?
So with like the early resin from like the 80s, I think I watched a video recently that was like, they were learning how to do that so they could bootleg like existing toys. So like if there was like a heavily desired like Ninja Turtles or something, or Star Wars figure, there'd be like a black market for these resin figures. So it is cool that it's been going on for, you know, even before I was born. But yeah, I just saw, you know, like a couple of these guys that I was following at the time, like L'Amour Supreme and Sucklord, Buff Monster, they all had kind of like toys coming out. So yeah. Like Buff Monster had like these Melty Misfits ice cream cone toys, and he set up like a vending machine in South Florida where I was living at the time. And I just like went and sought it out, because, you know, I knew his 2D art, his like murals and stuff. And then just through Instagram, I knew that he was putting up this thing. And so I'm like, okay, I have this resin toy now. And then I met Sucklord a couple times, and we talked about resin, and he was a funny guy back then. I haven't talked to him in a really long time. But yeah, we just saw like these bigger guys doing resin toys, and then started following people on Instagram, like Extraterrestrial,
yeah,
and like Dollar Slice. And Extraterrestrial is actually the one who like taught me and my friend in college how to make resin toys. So we just reached out to him, and he was super cool. He just told us, just get a pressure pot, you know, you can use these smooth on products, and he just taught us how to do it. He was a really nice guy, and I guess that's how we got into like bootlegging and resin toys and stuff.
It's pretty rad. I mean, I've worked with, or like bought pieces and had Extraterrestrial on podcasts, and having Sucklord on. I mean, we've spent, I don't know how, if you've listened to his episodes, but he's got a whole series on here. He's got another episode on top of that. And he, early on with this podcast, just took a stab at me and I'm going to post about it this week, where he like got on and was like, what's the point of this podcast? And I was like, well, it's to bring more eyes to this scene. He was like, and they're going to get that from your podcast. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know what I said. That was 4 years ago, but I mean, now we're here, we are, right? And going on, we've had good conversations, but that is crazy that they were willing to reach out and say like, hey, this is how you do it. These are all the things. You don't always find that in the earlier years. You hear about like Peter from Killer Bootlegs and like the different like little fights that might have happened between certain resin artists, and like, we got gang stuff, but we're really just talking about toys. Let's be real. Yeah, it's crazy. And then you move towards making Sifubi, which it seems to be the natural progression at this point. The longer I stay in the scene, the longer, like, I've only been here since 2020. And so the longer that I see this and I stay in the scene, I'm seeing that a lot of resin artists are kind of moving that way as factories become more and more accessible or all that stuff. And so at the beginning, you said that you took a little bit of a break from the toy stuff. Where did that break kind of fit in? And then I'm assuming Sifubi started right after that break.
Yeah, pretty much. It was I was producing a few things just for myself in like my mid-20s. That's actually where the original Cube Head was made. He's pretty obviously a Motu body with like, you know, sculpted hands and feet and loincloth and head and all that. So that was like a bootleg that I made just kind of for myself and painted up and just had a few like in my office or whatever. And so, you know, I was kind of doing that just like on the side. And then, I don't know. I really wanted to do this Sifubi thing. And I've always collected them. I've always had pieces like Gargamel pieces and some Skinner pieces. And my collection has grown a lot recently. So before it was just a few things, but I always had Sifubi and I always liked it. And I had to make one, you know, so I just took the Cube Head, you know, fixed him up, sent him out.
Unreal to have that. One of my favorite things about artists is when they will begin that process early on and then come back to those toys that they like first did and just carry it through their whole art career. So when you take the break and you come back, what's the hard launch that gets you in there? Because you've been around, I'm intrigued by how long you've been around and the following size on Instagram and how that aligns with those things. Because you've been around and been doing this for so long. Following size is under 1,000, which is wild to me. And you've had pieces and Sifubi come out. When did you hard launch coming back to toys?
So I used to be Young Eli Toys on Instagram. Okay. That was like my original account. And I don't think I even had 500 at the time. And I feel like it's become just more accessible to make these things recently. Like in college, it seemed like it was like so far away. It's like I have to contact a company overseas to like, no, like nobody in the United States does this. I have to contact somebody I don't know, send them like a few thousand dollars and just hope I get, you know, some toys shipped to me. But now I feel like it's kind of like e-commerce has gotten a lot easier and a lot more trustworthy. You know, there's like an assurance that, you know, if I put this this work into making this thing with a company overseas, like it's probably going to happen, and it did happen. So that's pretty cool. And so I think just maybe seeing so much of it on Instagram, just continuing to follow the scene, and then realizing that like so many more people are getting into it, into this than were when I first started. It's like, okay, now I can do this too, you know?
Which is unreal. Tell me about the first, like, when you're one, I got to hear about the name switch. Like, Raygun Wizard is definitely different than Young Eli. So what's the, why'd we choose that? And then tell me about the process of making Cubehead come to life in Soft Vinyl.
Sure. Yeah. So, so I used to be like pretty big into the streetwear brand Mishka. Mm-hmm. And they had like a blog post one day and they were promoting this rapper called Young Lean. And I was like, it's like this guy from Sweden. And he was just rapping about like just nonsense stuff in like this Swedish accent. And I just like, I couldn't get enough of it. I thought it was the best album of the year. And then I was like, if he can be Young Lean, I'm Young Eli. So I just put it up on Instagram. Just put it up on Instagram. And, you know, I put like my doodles and my bootlegs and stuff like that. It was super casual. You know, it was like just for fun at that time. And then I kind of just fell away from that account. It didn't really gain any traction because of the casual nature, you know? And I guess I just kind of got involved in like life stuff for a while. So like that time when I was making resin just kind of for myself and not really posting it, it was like mid-20s. Just had like a lot of stuff going on. So I wasn't really doing too much creatively for like an outward audience. Mm-hmm. So I guess I just came back around and I was like, you know, I really miss that creative part of my life. I miss being able to like work out things that are going on or that I don't fully understand, like from dreams in like a 3D or a 2D space. And so I was like, I'm going to make another Instagram. And then I was trying to think of a name and I was like, okay, I like wizards. Wizards are kind of cool. They're like doing arcane shit by themselves and in towers and kind of messing around with stuff. And that's kind of what I do. So I'll be a wizard, but I can't just be a wizard. I got to be some kind of wizard. And then I really liked like Black Ops 2 Zombies on Xbox.
The ray gun, yep.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, you know, ray gun's pretty cool. It's like the best thing you can get out of the mystery box. I'll be the ray gun wizard. So I had the namespace. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. I was thinking like, maybe I'll make a video game. Maybe I'll make like a comic book. And then it just kind of clicked. Like, I've always liked toys. I know how to make toys. I'm going to go back to making toys.
Yeah. Which the way that we come about names later on, I'm hoping this doesn't happen, but there's going to be a lot of artists that are going to regret some of these names. Like Ray Gun was, I love that. That was like, I like the Ray Gun in this video game. I think that like that kind of stuff. I mean, the toys that I make are under Yucko Toys. And I mean, I've kind of shifted away from that a little bit and started doing other stuff. And it's just unreal how I even came up with that name. And so it's like all these people later on are going to be like, it's time to pivot. I mean,
well, that's like the Suck Lord thing, right? It's like, I just make shitty toys. And so I'm the Suck Lord.
The branding of making garbage work is really fascinating because it means that if you never learned a new skill or never had like learned how to improve, even though he has, it wouldn't matter because your branding was trash toys, right? So like very smart branding early on. However, when I believe he has made vinyl. Like a company has made, like there's a spaceship or all these things that he's made that have been I would say like he has lowbrow art and there's also this like upper echelon. He's trying to like gallery stuff. And the name just doesn't pivot well when you're starting to make like higher end stuff. But that, hey, I love Sucklord. He's always welcome on the podcast. When you first started the process of making soft vinyl, how did you decide that Cubehead was going to be the one? Also, what was it like? Because it just was becoming more readily available. So how did you like navigate that?
Yeah, it was super hard to pick Cubehead as the first one. Cause he wasn't called Cubehead at the time. He was just like a busted up neck and neck Motu figure, with like some Sculpey on him.
And yeah.
I was like, I don't know if this is the one, but I mean, I had like a bunch of digital sculpt too. And so, I don't know. It was like, I got to pick one of them, you know,
yeah.
And I could sit here and I could be like, well, none like this one's kind of messed up in this way, or I could work a little bit more on this one. But like at the end of the day, you just have to kind of just do it. And so I was like, I'm going to go with Cubehead. He's the most like fleshed out one. I'm just going to put him out there. And then like, as soon as I did, I was like, oh, I don't know if I made the right choice. Maybe I should have gone with this other guy. He's got two heads and a crab claw for an arm, and it's kind of sick. But Cubehead made it out. And so, yeah, he's coming in. He's in his second color now, and people seem to like him. I didn't even realize this when I was designing him, but he's pretty good canvas for airbrushing. He's got lots of little details and crevices in him, so you can just kind of have fun with it. And a lot of people have enjoyed painting him, I think. So I'm glad I went with Cubehead. And then as far as like the process of producing him, I think you said,
mm-hmm.
It was pretty simple. I have on my Instagram some early photos of like him being 3D printed out. So I was able to prototype him at home. So I kind of had a rough idea of how.
We interrupted this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have an engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
How he would look, and things that I did like and things that I didn't like about the sculpt. And so I just made a couple edits, a little bit more detail, and then just kind of took a chance with a company that I found online producing vinyl toys. And you know, they've been super helpful throughout the process. It was like very minimal order quantity. So the first run of the bright pinks, it was just 100 pieces. And they're all gone now. And so I'm on my second order of 100 neon green pieces. And they've just, I mean, it's been such a simple process. It's like ordering from Amazon or something, except you get like a personal liaison that, you know, cares about your product and wants you to succeed. So that you come back and continue to work with them.
Which is rad. And it is no small feat to sell 100 soft vinyl figures. Like, that's an insane thing, because it's not a small piece, and it like so much work has gone into it, and it's an original design. Like, you crushed it selling 100 pieces. I've seen a couple different ones painted up, which are absolutely amazing, and getting a second set of 100, man. Like, going to all these shows, like, once this was made, did you start stepping into all these different shows?
I mean, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate that. And, yeah, I mean, Like if you had told me I was going to sell out, I thought it would take probably a year, maybe two years, maybe 3 years. And I was just, I'm psyched for like one person to want something that I made and to like find joy from like something that I created and get to share like part of my universe with somebody else and let them add to it with their imagination or with their collection or whatever they do with it. So that's been super sick. what was the second part of the question?
Selling, I mean, is this like the second that it,
stepping into spaces?
Yeah.
So like Assembly Required was the first in-person one that I did.
Asheville, right?
Asheville, right.
Yeah.
And that was cool because I had been there as like a patron like once or twice before when I had lived in Asheville for a few years. And that was really cool. It was just cool to see like other people get to put faces to names that I'd seen on Instagram. And then I had been in like some different online shows, like a couple of the extraterrestrial shows for some of his pieces. Some people have taken cube heads to different markets and fairs that they've been doing. I think Kachina has taken a few to some markets in the Pacific Northwest. But yeah, I mean, I have a few lined up. Some he's been to Chile. We're going to Australia later this year. Working on like a Japan show. It's crazy to see something like that you made go all these places and have so many people enjoy it.
Yeah.
I just feel like super lucky.
Dude, though I think luck is a cool thing, right? Like that's awesome. It is your like lineage of work coming to fruition in the form of Cubehead. Like it's a dope piece. I think the nostalgia part of the He-Man-esque feel of the body type, and then something that just feels like galactic or Galactus style with his head. Like that vibe is so good. So you're doing this. What size is this piece? 8 inches?
He's a 9.5 inches tall.
Holy geez. That is no small toy. So, and he comes header and baggy?
Yep. Header and bag.
Unreal. Unreal. That is so sick. So here's the real question, right? Like we have artists that sometimes like Killer Bootleg has Phantom Starkiller, and he has taken that from the beginnings, prototypes, resin, all that, and has stuck with Phantom Starkiller and Count Draco and Knuckle Duster. When you look at your career of making toys, is Cubehead the one that you want to stick with and take him as far as he'll go? Or do you have other ideas that you're looking to produce?
So, I love Cubehead. I love that people love Cubehead. And, you know, I'll keep putting out different colors and different schemes. But one thing I've kind of felt is that he's a little bit limited in as far as like what I can do creatively with him.
Okay. You
know, so I can put things in his hand. Maybe I can sculpt like a different head and rotocast it. But at the end of the day, he's always Cubehead. So you see the body, you see the eye on the loincloth. And so you know that it's like a Cubehead. And so one thing that I've seen that I really think works well and that I kind of admire is like like modular toys. So like MVH has the DX, right? And then like Retroband will have his like neat figures, and then that allows them to do so much. So you have the DX body, and then you have like a Krampus head on it, or you have like a Sam Hainis like pumpkin head on it. And so you can do so much more on your own without having to go back to your factory and say, you know, produce me this new figure. You can do stuff at home with like roto casting or different things like that. So I do have a new figure that's in mass production right now, and it kind of follows that suit where it's like he is a standalone or it is a standalone figure. But the body is kind of like generic and detailed enough that it can lend itself to like more rapid iteration after he's produced. So the plan is to have this like really awesome figure come out. Everyone knows the name of the figure, but then it also, it can be something else. If I get like an idea and I want to do like a small run of maybe like some roto casted heads or some different accessories or something like that. So I think that's the direction that we're going in.
I mean, have you talked about this new piece a lot, or are we?
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functional Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSOMTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
Just getting insight into it right now.
I've like teased some photos. I don't know if it's like recognizable that what it is.
Okay.
But it does have a new signature stamp, which I'm pretty excited about because one huge mistake I think of the cube head is that you can't tell who the artist is from the toy.
Okay.
So if you look at the bottom, it has a ray gun and it is my initials, but it's not super identifiable. So the new one will have it's got a great stamp. And I've done a few teases of like the figure details itself, but it's not come out 100% yet.
I can't wait to see it. Does that mean it's gonna push you? I mean, more shows, that kind of stuff? Are we talking like Designer Con, Collected Con, all the different cons?
I mean, I would definitely love to go to some of the bigger cons. I'm on the East Coast, so
yeah, it's tough.
You know, doing something like 5 points would be sick. I just need to know that, you know, I could get up there with like the right amount of inventory and that there would be enough excitement about pieces to make it kind of worth it. Cause it is a little bit different than like doing something like Assembly Required. Just with the like the table cost and the cost to get up there and things like that. So I'm hoping that more diversity in these figures and with what I'm doing with them will kind of get enough people interested that a trip to one of the bigger conventions would be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, they're always hit or miss, right? Like we're going for like public opinion. Do they want our toys? And then you have all these, is it a down year? Is it a good year? Like, good Lord, who knows? Who knows? I know that this year DesignerCon is going to be cool because it's their anniversary year. So I think they're going to really push advertising and all kinds of stuff. So I'm pumped about that and being there and seeing all the people. So I think that's where your pieces have been at DesignerCon before, right? There's somewhere where I've seen your piece.
I mean, there's a few artists that have, excuse me, that have cube heads and perhaps have brought them to DesignerCon.
Okay.
But nothing that I've sent specifically for DesignerCon.
Okay. I've seen one and I can't remember. I'll have to think. It'll come to me whose table it was at. But it was cool. And it was always a piece that was like, it's a big guy. That's a big boy that's sitting on that table. And that's dope. Looking over, I mean, you've been in this for like 12 years, 14 years, somewhere in there. And as you are looking over all of this time with your work, what do you hope is next?
So when I first produced CubeHead, I was like, okay, this is an investment. If I can make the investment back, if I can just make enough back to continue making toys to make another figure, I'd be psyched. And so that time came, and I made enough back on CubeHeads to make another run of CubeHeads and also have the second figure come out in production. And just having a lifelong creative outlet with a community attached to it, and just people you can meet who you like what they're doing and they like what you're doing, and you just get to share that. And then also to have it pay for itself in a way is the dream for me, I think. So, pretty happy with how things are going. If I could just keep making toys to keep making toys, that'd be awesome.
Dude, that's the main goal of the game right now. Make toys to make toys. I think that's where Toys on Tap is headed. I mean, we've stepped into production, and the goal is to make 4 toys this year. So we're mad dashing to see if I can get it done by December. And the reality is those toys then fund the next ones. Yep. And they fund all kinds of fun stuff. And so I'm really pumped about that. And I love that other artists do that. The last part of every podcast, the artist gets to share and plug and do all the things that they have coming up. And I know you've got another toy coming. You've got a green, super sweet. If it's the green I'm thinking that I've seen, it is super sweet, of CubeHead. So please plug away. Tell us all the details.
Sure. Yeah. So I have those neon green CubeHeads that you saw available. One of my biggest things is just making the toys accessible. So, I mean, I try to keep the price point and the shipping pretty low. And like you said, I think it's a pretty substantial figure. So I do have those green ones. Looking forward this year to Monster at Gogo in Australia. I'm going to send a few pieces over there. And then Assembly Required Philadelphia coming up. I'm going to have some pieces from Kachina to Kachina, Dirty Yeti, maybe Goomon, I think, is going to send a few. And then I'll have some kind of one-offs that I'm doing myself. I posted today, I have some Void Boys, which are kind of a more kaiju-esque CubeHead. Those are always fun to do. And then some little resin minis. So definitely have a lot. And then, like you said, we have Zorp. Zorp is the name of the new figure. He's coming out this year. So I'm looking forward to all of that.
Dude, we cannot wait. Also, as the last thing, you just did a giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
How'd that go?
It was sick. I felt a little bit silly because maybe 500 followers isn't a big deal. But for me, it felt like that's 500 people out there who like my shit, you know?
So dude, it is a huge deal. Don't sell that. Yeah, that's a huge deal.
So I was and I had I had just got literally a week before I had just got those green CubeHeads. And I was like, this color is awesome. This came out really nice. I'm just going to give away the first one. So I had a ton of people enter, and the guy that it went to, Toy Chef.
Cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked a little bit afterwards, and I knew of him, but he's got a sick collection. So glad to see there's going to be a CubeHead up there with some of his other stuff.
Heck yeah. Dude, thank you again for coming on Toys on Tap this week.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the invite.